This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very pleased to have with us on the show again, Dr. Peter Breggin. Dr. Breggin, thank you for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be on again. You have a lively, factual, interesting show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We do our best to try and bring that to our listeners every week, and it's nice to hear you say that. Thank you very much. Dr. Breggin, we've had you on before. You are the author of The War Against Children, Talking Back to Prozac, Talking Back to Ritalin, and I just recently received a proof copy of your newest book, Is Your Drug Your Problem? And lo and behold, a few days before we're going to have you on the air, I'm looking at an Associated Press story that says, study suggests doctors are overdiagnosing kids with ADD. This is something that you have been saying for years and years. We do have a problem with the overdiagnosis of psychiatric illnesses and then also the use of psychiatric medications as the treatment of first choice, correct, Dr. Breggin?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me give the more exact title. The title of the book is Your Drug May Be Your Problem.
Thank you.
And the subtitle tells it all is How and Why to Stop Taking Psychiatric Medications. And goodness knows we have a problem of overdiagnosing everything in this country from the psychiatric perspective because it is largely a marketing issue. The drug companies have become brilliant at marketing. They look for new markets. Children were one of the great undiscovered markets. And so the drug companies have gotten together with federal agencies like the FDA and the National Institute of Mental Health and literally held conferences on a very big conference jointly with these drug companies about how to see to it that more children got psychiatric drugs, marketing to kids. And it's a disaster in this country.
It's a tremendously frightening thing when we're talking about this, you know, this real push to keep prescribing these mind-altering, mind-changing, in some cases permanently mind-changing drugs to children, and to adults for that matter as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. The drugs are addictive, and drugs are addictive by changing the brain. All of the stimulants that we're talking about, Adderall, Ritalin, Dexedrine, profoundly affect the brain and are in Schedule 2 of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration as addictive. And again, that's important not only in terms of the fact that you increase your child's risk of becoming addicted in young adulthood when they take these drugs, but you're also injuring the child's brain, and you're also going to have withdrawal problems from these drugs. What isn't known by people, Mike, is that all psychiatric drugs produce withdrawal reactions, and that's why we've written Your Drug May Be Your Problem to really show people not only the dangers of taking, but the dangers of withdrawing from any kind of drug, for kids or adults.
Talk, if you will, about what some of those dangers are.
Well, one way to think about it is that the brain is always fighting the drug effect, always fighting it. So that if you're having a specific effect from a drug, your brain's going to try to do the opposite. The common experience of people, for example, is, say, taking a drink to try to help them sleep at night, and then very often you wake up 4 hours later, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and unable to sleep at all because your brain has fought back. And since the drug is wearing off, your brain is more hyper and takes over. The exact same thing happens when you take any drug that sedates or quiets you. So that if you're taking Xanax or Ativan or Klonopin or Valium, the old standby, if you're taking any of these drugs to quiet you down, to get some sleep, Dalmane, or to reduce your anxiety, you're going to start getting withdrawal reactions that cause anxiety. And they can happen in the very same day. You could take a Xanax at night and then wake up in the morning more anxious than ever, thinking, oh boy, I really need this drug. But in fact, you're going through a withdrawal from the Xanax the night before. You could take a Xanax in the morning and be going into withdrawal by mid-afternoon, getting more and more anxious, thinking, oh boy, it's time for my pill, when you're going through withdrawal.
Yeah.
And if a drug stimulates you, I'll give one other category example. Like, if a drug stimulates you, like Ritalin or many of the antidepressants, like Prozac, Zola, Paxil, and so on, then you're going to have a big chance of crashing as you withdraw. So it's very important, that is getting depressed, even suicidal, if you stop the drug. So it's very important, especially if you've been on drug for a long period of time, for months, to come off very slowly.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Breggin, author of the books Talking Back to Prozac, Talking Back to Ritalin, The War Against Children, and most recently, Your Drug May Be Your Problem. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We're talking about psychiatric medications. Dr. Breggin, one of the things that I'd like to get to, but first, I want to kind of go back to something that you said before. Of course, I'm looking at this report on this study about overdiagnosing kids with ADD, and that a statement in the book, Your Drug May Be Your Problem, is that, I mean, A, something you said to me before, which was, you know, kids get bored in school, and yet our thing is, well, let's drug them into compliance. I'd like to talk a little bit about that, but I'd also like to talk about this thing that you're stating in the book, Your Drug May Be Your Problem, that these drugs are becoming the treatment of choice, the first treatment of choice, whereby perhaps other interventions with people who are having problems might be better for them, healthier for them in the long run, but what we've become as a society whereby just drug them, get them out of the office. Can you talk about those things?
Yeah, well, you know, you have to ask what causes people to behave badly, or children or adults to behave badly, to be out of control, to be deeply disturbed, to be anxious or suicidal. What causes any of the kind of suffering, emotional suffering? And there's no evidence that any of this is biologic. And if someday some of it is discovered to be biologic, there's no reason to believe that the kinds of drugs we give people would improve their biology, because we know that, in fact, from animal research where you can grind up the brain and look at it, that the drugs all drastically disrupt the chemistry of the brain. So basically what we're doing when we take psychiatric drugs is that we're suppressing emotional signals. And instead of dealing with what's going on, we are trying to suppress ourselves, or in the case of children, we're suppressing somebody else. And it really isn't much more than that. If a child is bored in school and hates school and takes a drug and then sits down quietly in class and does what he's told, you've suppressed that child's distress. You've suppressed their signals of discomfort, anger, upset, or rebellion, and you are producing a dysfunction in the brain and ultimately very likely damaging the brain. And if you're an adult and you're very, very depressed and despairing, if you take a drug that either gives you an artificial high or mutes your depression, you're basically putting down your own emergency signals, your internal emergency signals of distress that are telling you your life is sad, depressing, frustrating, unhappy, and that you need as a human being to find a way to come to grips with that life through therapy, through religion, through new viewpoints, through philosophy, through relationships, through all the various ways people can, not necessarily just therapy. So, you know, my basic view is that drugs are the wrong approach to helping people, even in deep distress. I wouldn't take these away from adults. I mean, if adults are informed about the dangers, including withdrawal, as we try to do in the book, it's up to the adults. But I would actually stop doing it to children. I think to bathe the growing young brain in these toxic agents, to do it to kids who have no choice, I think shouldn't be done. I don't think it's the way to handle our conflicts with our kids, and I don't think it's a way to handle our children's distress over their lives with us. In general, the drugs, if we look at children, the drugs we're giving them do not make them feel better. Ritalin, Adderall, and the drugs of the stimulant drugs, and the antidepressants, these new Prozac-like drugs, like Prozac and Zoloft, do not make kids feel better. They're not dying for them. They're not fighting to have them. In fact, they often make children crazy. A very high percentage of children who take antidepressants will become manic, even in short clinical studies, 4%, 6% of children become manic on these drugs. Ritalin commonly makes children very depressed and can also make them manic, but more commonly makes them very depressed. So these aren't drugs that the kids particularly want to take. And when we ask children what they think of these drugs, they don't much like them. But what does happen, and we now have a study confirming this, is that the drugs change the brain of the child. So as a child becomes a young adult, he discovers that he has inner distresses that are now only handleable in his mind by taking more stimulants. In other words, he has been sensitized to need the drugs. He's been pre-addicted, in a sense, by having his brain changed. And you have higher rates of stimulant abuse, including cocaine abuse, and you have higher rates of nicotine abuse, cigarette smoking, in young people. And these are studies that have just come out of the University of California, Berkeley. So that's the case. Now, the drugs he's talking about, like Klonopin, are also addictive, but they're the sedative drugs that adults often get addicted to. They're very much like alcohol. Klonopin, Ativan, Xanax, Valium are cross-addictive with alcohol, just like Ritalin and Adderall are cross-addictive with cocaine. So the street drugs that stimulate, are like cocaine, are cross-addictive with the drugs we give kids, and the sedative drugs that people buy in a liquor store are cross-addictive with the sedatives that psychiatrists give. So in that sense, he's right. Now, whether or not we're breeding criminals, whether these kids will go on and steal drugs and get in trouble with the law because they're abusing stimulants, that certainly would be a fear. We don't know about that yet, but it would be a fear. My greatest fear really is that, A, we're just damaging brains of young growing kids, and B, we're teaching them that they are not in charge of their lives, that they can't take over the world, that they can't get out there and grow and learn about themselves and learn to manage the world and even to change the world. Instead, we're teaching them that they have brain defects, that they have to take drugs to be managed by other people. We're raising a generation of drug-dependent children and children who won't believe in themselves as powerful young adults but will think they're defective and in need of drugs. This is a tragedy. And I urge parents to really strongly consider taking children off psychiatric drugs. The antidepressants, there aren't any studies confirming their usefulness in kids. They're not even FDA approved for kids. And while Ritalin and the stimulants are FDA approved, they're very short studies, not long-term studies. And they're studies of really suppressing behavior. There's no evidence they improve academic life or the well-being of the child. I don't think drugs are the answer. But I also think that people need to review in our book what are the dangers of coming off of each drug, and if they've been on a while, to come off slowly.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with Dr. Peter Breggin. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes. Doctor, I wondered, I've got two questions. What incentives are offered to doctors these days to prescribe drugs to children? And the other question might be a little out of your realm, but I used to study Adele Davis. Her nutritional research showed that often there was some kind of nutritional complement lacking, and they've done studies in prisons where the inmates go crazy, get more and more aggressive and irritable when they're lacking certain vitamins, minerals, other necessary nutritional components. In news this morning, they said that apparently on average, the children are receiving 30% fried French fries as their you know, as 30% of the component of fruits and vegetables, so it's denatured food they're eating. I think nutritionally we used to appreciate that that's a crucial component for the mental health of children, and I'm just wondering, are we paying attention to that these days? Thank you.
Well, I appreciate what the issues you're raising, but in fact, there's simply nothing the matter with the children that we're drugging. It's not that they need something done to their bodies in the way of a nutritional supplement or that they have some element missing in their bodies. Our children are being subjected to family lives and school lives and community lives, which cause them distress, conflict, cause them to feel alienated. And they need, above all else, to have us as adults engage them in a meaningful way in our homes, our schools, and our communities. Now, there are some children who are suffering from gross starvation. They clearly need to have decent diets. There are some kids with head injuries. They need those to be attended to. There are some kids with hormonal disorders. But the vast majority of the kids who are getting diagnosed and drugged have nothing wrong with their bodies at all. And it's a mistake, I think, for these nutritionists to move in thinking they have a new market when there's nothing wrong with these kids. The studies that have been done on prisoners about the various missing elements and so on, that's been going on for generations because we want to make believe that people are in prison because of something wrong with their body rather than the enormous societal pressures that are inducing more crime in this country than in any other country in the Western world. We have more people in prison than the Russians or the South Africans ever did in this country. The majority now are African American, and an even larger number fall into the group of the darker skinned races in this country. They're not in there because they're more violent. They're not in there because they deserve to be. By and large, they're in there because they're being selectively policed in their communities for the use and selling of drugs, whereas white people in the suburbs, white kids are getting off, the black kids are going to jail. And that's been studied in great detail by 100-to-1 or more. If you're caught in possessing a drug, if you're black, you're more likely to go to jail than if you're white. So these are large social, psychological issues. I think it's a mistake to focus on people's bodies as the source of these huge, huge problems in this country where we're locking up so many millions of people in prisons and in mental hospitals, and where we are now drugging our children and virtually turning our schools into mental hospitals and jails by drugging our kids in large numbers into submission in them.
Dr. Bregan, what about the pressures and incentives that are put on or given to physicians to prescribe these medications?
Well, the incentives start very high up and then trickle down. The average physician, his main incentive, say you're a pediatrician, your main incentive is business. And to give drugs and get your 15-minute insurance coverage for your med check is a very efficient way to run a practice and to keep your head above water. And pediatricians, by and large, like psychiatrists, are among the lowest paid doctors. So they get into these policies of 15 minutes, take a drug in and out, and in that way they can begin to earn not as much, but almost as much as other physicians. So there is this big direct financial incentive to have a large practice full of people on drugs. If instead of seeing somebody for an hour, as I do in a typical consultation, I would have divided up into 4 15-minute med checks, I could make twice as much money. So the incentives are very, very clear. In addition, the HMOs are giving a lot of incentive by refusing to cover anything else other than these short med checks, and they won't cover therapy, but they will cover the med checks without question or challenge, whereas they'll challenge anybody who's in therapy. But that's the real lower down kinds of incentives. The biggest incentives that sway and move the whole profession are the fact that all of the drug advocates, with the exception of two or three of us in the United States, take money heavily from the drug companies. They do research for the companies. They're sent to international conferences by the companies. Companies will even write articles for them under the doctor's name. They just get all kinds. Often they just go to work for the drug company. Recently, a few years ago now, the director of research at the National Institute of Mental Health left the government, became vice president of Eli Lilly, who makes Prozac. I mean, I was right in the middle of the Prozac controversy. So the drug companies support all the journals. I get journals sent to me free as a physician, and the only way the journals can send themselves out free is they have drug company money to do it with. The conferences that we doctors go to are sponsored by drug companies. Often the things we attend are directly paid for by the drug company. Sometimes it's more the infrastructure of the conference is paid for by the drug company. This just goes on and on. So it's more than incentives. It's a giant system in which billions of dollars of drug company money move psychiatry toward the selling of drugs and also the rest of medicine.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Bregan, author of the book Your Drug May Be Your Problem, also talking back to Prozac, talking back to Ritalin, and the war against children. Dr. Bregan, a question comes to my mind from something that you had said earlier, and that is, you know, I see a family, and they're having problems in their family, and they don't know what to do. They go to a professional, or the school administration sort of jumps into their life and says, you know what, we've got to do this. You've got to get this kid on Ritalin or Prozac or whatever. I can see where a lot of families might feel like, well, I've got these people who are supposed to know something telling us what we need to do, and we don't know what to do, so let's do that. I mean, how do they resist that? And then I guess the question that comes after that, if we have someone who's been on these drugs, how do we safely get them off of them?
Well, you're raising exactly the problems we try to address in the book. In Your Drug May Be Your Problem, we actually discuss the problems that your doctor has, why he's afraid of not putting you on drugs, why the doctor's afraid, he or she is afraid of taking you off drugs, how to talk to your doctor about it, how to get professional help. Doctors have been so propagandized now that they are afraid that they have to put people on drugs. And then in addition, with drug companies like Eli Lilly advertising in magazines, the doctors are being pressured by the families to put people on drugs. I think the biggest antidote is information. And in our book, it's co-authored, incidentally, by David Cohn, who's a professor at the University of Montreal. In our book, we try to give an overview for the patient and the doctor of some of the really major adverse effects that all classes of drugs have. Really, all classes of psychiatric drugs can kill you, and they can all cause various kinds of craziness, mental disturbances. And then we try to look at each of the drugs in terms of what side effect you're going to get when you try to come off a drug. In general, you want to come off slowly. If you've been on a drug for months or years, almost any psychiatric drug, it's going to be better off if you take weeks, and if you've been on many years, even months, to come off the drug. And to do it often in pieces, we suggest, for example, one method that pretty much guarantees that you won't be risking your life withdrawing is to come off 10% a week for 10 weeks. That gives you a 10-week withdrawal. Roughly try to come off 10% a week over 10 weeks. You can talk to your doctor and your pharmacist about how to divide the pills, either getting smaller pills or, if the pharmacist says it's safe, breaking the pills up and slowly coming off. But you want a support system when you come off. It's best to have a wise, caring clinician supervising. It's at least as important to have a friend or family member know you're coming off the drugs. Because often when we come off, we go through a lot of mental disturbance. We can get suicidal, we can get angry and even violent as we feel these disturbances coming off. And it's really good to have a trusted person saying to you, hey, Joe, hey, Jane, I think you're actually acting in a really irrational way right now. You need to think about what you're doing. Maybe you're coming off too fast. Slow down. Have a better perspective on what you're doing. So as many people as you can get involved in the process, the better. And if you can get a good clinician involved, that's really, really helpful.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, I'm a local physician, and I just want to make one comment about the way things have changed. I think I hate to harp on managed care, but managed care has been part of it.
That's okay. You can do that on this program.
Okay. I do a lot of harping on managed care. I know that something that happened since I became a physician in about 1985 is that a lot of mental health care is now being transferred to primary care physicians. And that has been a drive by the managed care plans not to pay for therapy and to limit therapy severely and make it very hard to get therapy. And all the families in this area will tell you about their battle trying to get their kid treated by a proper therapist. And it's sometimes just easier to try a medication. And I know that I went to a conference some years ago that kind of struck me at the time, that they were saying all primary care physicians could be taught to do a quick assessment, figure out what drug people should be on, put them on the drug, and that therapy was completely unnecessary anymore, that all we needed now was drugs. And I didn't believe it at the time. I don't believe it now. But that's what's being taught now, and it's being supported by the drug companies. So I think the drug companies do have a lot to do with it, and I see it even in the practice level.
Thank you for calling in.
Sure.
Well, certainly, Dr. Breggin, I think probably most of that you would agree with, correct?
Well, yes, and it's just so wonderful to have a fellow physician call in and basically confirm what I'm saying, because, in fact, what I'm saying is true both politically and scientifically, and we are in this sad state of affairs. She put it very well that that the managed care insurers, they want to have you do your 15-minute check with your GP because that's the cheapest thing for them. And one reason it's so cheap is that patients don't do it. So they go and they get Prozac, and half of them very quickly get some terrible adverse effect, agitation, anxiety, sexual dysfunction, and they stop the drug and they never go back and they never get help, and managed care says that's a victory. And we're not facing this, that the drugs so often cause people to stop taking them and never to go back to the doctor, and that this is a major reason why it's cheaper.
We've been talking with Dr. Peter Breggin, author of the books Talking Back to Prozac, Talking Back to Ritalin, The War Against Children, and most recently, Your Drug May Be Your Problem. Any final thoughts for our audience today?
Well, I want to say that we have tried in this book for the very first time to give an easy-to-read book about why you might not want to take drugs, some of the reasons you personally might not want, that you've always sensed but no one's ever voiced for you. And then we try to give an overview of some of the major dangers, not all of them because no book could do that, but some of the major dangers of every single type of psychiatric drug. Then we try to look at the withdrawal effects. And this is the first and only book in the history of medicine to really focus on the withdrawal effects of all of the psychiatric drugs. And then finally, we talk about some of the ways that you can make it easier for yourself to withdraw from the drugs. So it's a real practical information book, the first one like that that I've written.
Dr. Peter Breggin, thank you for joining us today, and I really appreciate having you on the show. Hopefully we can have you on again.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'll be happy to come back to.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you this edition of the program today. If you'd like more information about Full Logic Reverse, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by phone, 530-265-9462. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.